This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by Future Farm Botanicals Liquid Turmeric Liposome Complex, a natural solution to chronic pain. Future Farm's liquid turmeric with liposomes and nanotechnology delivers maximum absorption for effective pain relief. Sourced and manufactured in the United States, this product contains 1,600 milligrams of curcumin and powerful antioxidant properties. This plant-based curcumin is used to possibly reduce inflammation, block proteins that trigger swelling, and intercept inflammatory pathways, significantly decreasing inflammatory responses. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's future, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Take advantage of Future Farm's buy two, get one free offer at myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to talk about gastrointestinal health with an expert. He's one of our go-to guys on a variety of nutritionally related subjects. He's a frequent contributor here on Intelligent Medicine. Neil Levin is Senior Nutrition Education Manager and a product formulator for Now Foods. He's an award-winning board-certified clinical nutritionist, a founder and officer of the American Nutrition Association. That's pretty cool, Neil, because we can actually, a little later talk a little bit about the American Nutrition Association. But I only learned recently that, I thought I was early on the scene with the American Nutrition Association. You're really one of the original proponents of this wonderful organization that seeks to revolutionize our approach to prevention and treatment of chronic degenerative diseases that are nutritionally oriented in the United States, the American Nutrition Association. That's great. He's also director of the Mid-American Health Organization, and he serves on the International American Association of Clinical Nutritionists Clinical Nutrition Certification Board. A lot of good qualifications to help us with a discussion of gastrointestinal health today. So, welcome, Neil. It's a pleasure having you back.
Always a pleasure, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you.
So, set the stage for us. What's the context here? You know, why should we be concerned about gastrointestinal health? You know, even if, maybe we just have occasional GI symptoms, even if we're not symptomatic, does it have implications for our overall health?
Well, it does. There's a barrier in the GI tract between what you eat or drink and what enters into your circulation, into your body and your organs and tissues. And so that separation, that us versus not us is one way to look at that, is how we separate, how do we filter what's coming in? And we have a GI tract, a gastrointestinal tract, that is designed to do exactly that. Keep out things we don't want to get in farther and to let them pass through and safely excrete anything that is undesirable. And so our systems are designed to be able to distinguish between things that are we can digest and are nourishing and things that we can't digest or are not nourishing or sometimes they're even dangerous that we want to pass through us. So we need an intact GI lining. We need the gastrointestinal tract to have integrity. And it's not only the cells, it's a mucous membrane, it's a probiotic layer, what they call a biofilm, a biological film, a thin film of living organisms. And a lot of you have probably heard that we have billions or even trillions of organisms living in our bodies as symbiotic co-inhabitants of our bodies that we rely on to do certain things for us. We rely on the probiotics in our gut to stimulate immunity, to achieve the right pH, the acid-alkaline balance, to generate vitamins like vitamin K or neurotransmitters like melatonin and serotonin or GABA that can actually be produced in very large quantities by gut bacteria and transferred into the central nervous system via the vagus nerve, which also sends signals back and forth and turns the gut into a secondary brain for the body. And there's elements of it in terms of circadian rhythm and timing that are intimately involved between the brain and the gut.
Yeah, there's a whole new emerging science of psychobiotics, the notion that the bacteria in our intestinal tract, our microbiome, influences our moods, can be responsible for neurodegenerative diseases even. There's actually some pretty robust literature now, the linkage between imbalances in the gastrointestinal tract and Parkinson's disease. So that's really an emerging area of science.
Yeah, and they actually sometimes give antidepressants to people for gut disorders. So again, the relationship is almost muddied to an extent. There's an interrelationship between the digestive tract and the central nervous system.
Indeed. Okay, so what are some of the modern factors that undermine the integrity of our gastrointestinal tract?
Well, one thing is lacking good gut bacteria to maintain that balance. And, you know, it's interesting because I read an article around 2008, something like that, that they had finally discovered what the appendix is for. And this was in Nature Journal and all these places coming out with the Scientific American.
And they just thought it was there for the enrichment of surgeons, you know, that this, if the surgeon wanted to get a new Mercedes, he'd operate on four or five appendices and, you know, just rack up the fees and then go out and get a new car. That it was essentially a vestigial organ, you know, like a vestigial tail that was kind of a throwback from our early primate ancestry, and that just didn't do anything at all. You know, why is it there? You know, it can get infected. It can cause trouble. So, you know, nature's mistake. But we found out recently that there's something to it, right?
Yeah. And what's interesting, I went back to my old dictionaries, and I've got dictionary from when I was a kid from the 1960s and one from the 70s. The one in the 1960s is talking about, even something like the pineal gland was not known when I was a child. We now know it produces melatonin. Mm-hmm. It has a role in circadian rhythm. It had no known function if you go back to an old dictionary from 50, 60 years ago. Mm-hmm. So a lot of these things we found out that really have a function. And recently they've actually found that the appendix has been evolving in different mammal species. In related species, it's evolved something like 30 or 40 times in history in different types of species. And it's in over 100 different species of mammals now, where they either have an appendix or a similar fold in the intestine that's full of lymph cells. So it's kind of like a tonsil or something like that.
Another organ that we thought was superfluous, and we took them out wholesale, especially in the baby boomer generation. Very few baby boomers are alive and well who still have tonsils. Did you have your tonsils taken out? I had them out. You know, it was kind of a rite of passage.
I did not. Oh. I never quite needed that. So
lucky you. Your parents were astute. They kind of protected you from the ravages of aggressive medicine.
Well, they probably would have taken them out if the doctor had recommended it, but it never got quite that bad, I guess. So.
Good deal.
It's actually kind of a boot camp for immune cells and probiotic cells to integrate their functions. Mm-hmm. So you're training immune cells, and it's actually believed that probiotics serve as a communications media for cells in the body, the immune cells to communicate to the gut lining cells through the probiotics as a communications media. Isn't that interesting? Medium.
Wow. I also heard that when, you know, and this was a frequent feature of life, people would consume spoiled food or rotten food. Food poisoning was quite common as humans evolved. You know, they would be scavengers. They weren't strong enough sometimes to bring down big game animals. So they would find something, you know, like they were like scavengers, like hyenas on the Serengeti Plain. And they would find something. They would gorge themselves because they were starved. And then they would come down with a big tummy ache. But because of the location of the appendix, it was kind of sequestered. It would hold the beneficial bacteria so that it could reintroduce them after a bout of food poisoning. That's one theory anyway. By no means is it substantiated that that is the sole function, along with the things that you mentioned.
Yeah, but a reboot system, in essence, is a good idea where the large and small intestines come together. And also, it tends to be something that is, if you ruin your probiotic status, if you're not eating well, if you get nasty bugs in there that don't contribute to your health, if you take antibiotics or have a poor diet where you're not maintaining your probiotics, you might need to have a good culture system and reboot system. And it's nothing more than a good culturing center for growing probiotics. And if you kill off your probiotics with antibiotics, which a lot of us did, especially those of us who grew up in the 50s and 60s, where they would give us antibiotics all the time if we were sick, you kill off your native bacteria there, and what's going to grow there? You're going to get candida or salmonella or E. coli or all these other things that are in the environment that we're exposed to, but we're not keeping them down in terms of numbers. We're not controlling them with competitive exclusion by having other organisms, by having biofilms of healthy things in there. And if you get rid of them long enough, I know people who are on antibiotics for acne for years and years, for example.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to their digestion? What happens to their gut integrity? What happens to their immunity? About 2/3 of immunity occurs in the guts because that's the interface with things we're eating, like you said, and trying to keep out nasty things that don't belong there. And we need the good stuff there. And we need fiber too, because fiber is the food for certain of these organisms, especially in the large intestine, like bifidobacteria.
It's a prebiotic as opposed to a probiotic. It helps to support the probiotics' growth and maintenance.
Right. There's the fiber that we can't digest, they can ferment and turn into fuel. And that's one of the side effects is they produce short-chain fatty acids that are necessary to maintain our gut integrity. It's a fuel for the gut cells themselves. So if you don't have enough fiber, you tend to lose that gut integrity. You tend to lose the protective bacteria in the gut. And that's not a good thing. And the government estimates we're only getting about 1/3 of the fiber we need in general. So as we're eating more and more refined foods and processed foods, another factor in gut health.
Well, how do we address some of these problems? Because you, as an award-winning board-certified clinical nutritionist, also as a product formulator for Now Foods and Protocol for Life Balance, which is the physician line for Now Foods, you've come up with some basic supplements that can support the GI tract. So what are some of your favorites?
Well, once we get beyond the probiotics and the prebiotics, there are some other options for gut health. Now, for the prebiotics, there are some good options. And, you know, some of them are needed in higher amounts than others. But anytime you get fiber, it's generally going to be good for the gut bacteria and for the gut environment. In terms of probiotics, I actually like...
Backing up on this fiber, are there products that you like? I mean, certainly it's about, you know, eating foods that are rich in oligosaccharides, you know, things like Jerusalem artichoke and, you know, foods that contain these soluble fibers. But, you know, let's say someone is unsure that their diet is providing enough. Are there products that you've worked on or developed or familiar with that can help to support that?
Yeah, I mean, fiber like acacia fiber, mm-hmm. acacia gum,
that's popular,
is a prebiotic fiber. To some extent, flax is a prebiotic fiber. Oatmeal can be, and oat fiber can be prebiotic fibers. There's the FOS and inulin. Mm-hmm. FOS is fructo-oligosaccharides and inulin. The only difference is one is fermented and one is extracted from the bulbs, from the root mass of starchy things like ours comes from same source that tequila is made from agave.
Oh, wow. I thought that it all came from Jerusalem artichoke, but agave also will give you that same. That's kind of a byproduct of the tequila industry, is what they discard is goes into the supplement industry, perhaps.
Right. When you press and get the juice out to make the tequila, then you have that root mass, which is really starchy. And that's what becomes the prebiotic fiber.
Very cool. That's a little tidbit I didn't know about.
And a certified organic, by the way.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah.
And then you can do, you know, tequila shots as a chaser, you know, just. So, okay. So one of the things that you're big on, I've noticed, is something called zinc carnosine. And I think, you know, that's a little bit, shall we say, less popular in the nutrition world. You know, it's one of those things that I think has a lot of potential, but I don't really know the science behind zinc carnosine. So can you share that with us?
Sure. Zinc carnosine is considered a fairly powerful antioxidant. It helps stabilize the cell membranes, especially in the GI tract, the stomach and the intestines. It accelerates tissue healing, and it particularly protects the gastric and intestinal lining from what they call insult, from damage, from being attacked by things. So they've done studies in animal studies. They do a study where they give a drug like indomethacin that will cause gastric damage.
A non-steroidal inflammatory. And which is actually, of all the drugs, of all the NSAIDs, in my mind, that's one of the worst. That's almost asking for a gastrointestinal bleed if you take it for more than a few days at a time. It's a horrible stuff.
Yeah. So they use that as a method of causing damage in animal studies. And then they give some of them a placebo and some of them the zinc carnosine. And with the zinc carnosine, the gastric damage goes down by 75% and the small intestinal damage goes down by 50%. This is in the journal Gut, which is a leading journal.
So let's distinguish. You know, the gastrointestinal is bad. The upper GI, the stomach stuff is bad because you can get gastritis, which is painful, or you can get an ulcer, or you can even have a gastrointestinal hemorrhage, you know, which is a medical emergency. You might need, you know, blood transfusions. That's upper GI damage from non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. But you alluded to something which I think is important, because virtually everyone who takes a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug, even if they don't have stomach pain, even if they don't have gastritis, even if they don't get an ulcer, thank God. Okay. Good for you. You know, you've got some kind of chronic pain problem. You take maybe Advil, Motrin, Naprosyn, which is called Aleve. You're going to get some small intestine damage. But you're not going to feel it. Perhaps it's silent. Are there any consequences to that?
Well, sure. First of all, if you damage the mucous membrane or the tissues behind it, that's your protective layer. So all of a sudden, you don't have a tight barrier. You're not protecting the body from things that are coming into the GI tract. And if there's things that are challenging the immune system, you want them to pass through you. If they start entering the intestinal wall because there's gaps or damage or the barrier is gone, then you're triggering an immune reaction to it. You're using immune capability mm-hmm. that could be used elsewhere. Mm-hmm. You're requiring more resources for that. And you're theoretically even producing a form of autoimmune yep. problem mm-hmm. where you're teaching your immune system to react to things that it normally won't encounter because only things that are very small can enter through the gut and enter the rest of the body.
You're creating leaky gut syndrome by virtue of low-grade chronic damage to your lower intestinal tract, your small intestine. So let's take this hypothetical scenario. Somebody who has rheumatoid arthritis. Rheumatoid arthritis, you know, swollen joints, pain, aches and pains. So first-line therapy is, you know, take some non-steroidal anti-inflammatories. Maybe the over-the-counter kind, maybe a prescription one, a little stronger because, you know, it's got more impact on the inflammation. But you're actually creating a worsened situation in the lower intestinal tract where we believe, since rheumatoid arthritis is an autoimmune condition, that endotoxins, bacterial byproducts, and even food molecules can traverse the intestinal wall, get into the circulation, can travel to remote joints, and you worsen the vicious cycle, right? I mean, this is a scenario repeated tens of millions of times every day in the United States.
Definitely, and you can even react to proteins that should be digested, but if you catch them before they're fully digested and they start entering the gut lining and triggering an immune reaction, let's say you're eating some meat, and the meat has similar composition to your muscles, or there's a protein that's similar to something in your joint. And all of a sudden, your immune system is reacting to that protein wherever it encounters it, not necessarily only in the GI tract. If it finds it in your muscle, if it finds it in your joint, or your eyes, or anywhere else, it can actually react to that and cause mm-hmm. inflammation and start attacking it.
Mm-hmm. This is what's referred to in medicine as molecular mimicry, which is one theory of why the body mounts an attack against benign things, the very food you're eating, but there's collateral damage to your joints. It perceives these things as a foreign material. You can compound the problem, of course. Say you take a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug and your doctor says, just as a precaution, so that you don't get an ulcer, I'll give you some Nexium or Prilosec so it would protect your stomach. Double trouble, perhaps?
Yeah. So anyway, they repeat the study in humans, and they're actually testing gut permeability. So healthy volunteers are taking that same medication, and with it, they're taking the zinc carnosine or placebo. And there was a threefold increase in gut permeability, leaky gut, in the group who took the medication, the anti-inflammatory. There was no increase in gut permeability in the group that took the zinc carnosine.
Wow. So, you know, a good thing for people with autoimmune disorders where there is presumably leaky gut. We can test people in our offices. Not everybody has access to these tests for leaky gut syndrome, and we can confirm it and then treat with zinc carnosine. Or, you know, say you do have to take anti-inflammatory medication. You know, some people really need it for, you know, controlling pain. It's almost de rigueur. You know, just as when you take a statin, you should take coenzyme Q10, you really should be taking zinc carnosine to offer some protection, correct?
Yes, that would definitely help.
Great. All right, it's a good point at which to pause because we're discussing GI, things related to the gastrointestinal tract, with Neil Levin. He's Senior Nutrition Education Manager and a product formulator for Now Foods and Protocol for Life Balance. And we'll talk more about natural agents for GI protection when we return. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.